Welcome back to the Weekside Podcast. I'm Jenny Vrentis here with Connor Orr, our new twice a week podcast. We hope you're enjoying hearing us a little bit more. Or if not, well, we're here anyway. So this week's show, we thought the draft is 2 weeks away, which is kind of stunning. It really crept up on us because this has been such a strange offseason and spring and year in the life of America. But the draft is almost here. Connor Orr, on Tuesday's website of the MMQB, I was going to say Tuesday's paper, Connor, but we don't work for a newspaper anymore.
Oh, man. Memories.
Tuesday on the MMQB, Connor has his mock draft. Now, last year, we made this mock draft competition into a really big thing. We had a competition with a bottle of wine on the line, which I guess we could do this year, like remotely. I guess we could send each other wine.
I'm in.
But, all right. So Connor's first on the board with the mock draft. Mine will be next week, and then I believe Albert's will be the last week. So we've got some, you know, some interesting debate coming.
Yeah, I'm nervous. I finished in last place in our competition last year, mostly because of my legitimized, what would you call it? When you're going after the wrong person, when you're chasing the wrong person. My love of DeAndre Baker cost me dearly last year, extremely.
Oh, okay.
And then that just threw off the order of everything. And so I'm trying to be a little more careful this year, but also maintaining a little bit of the spice because, you know, that's why you come here, right? That's why you click on a mock draft. It has to be interesting because the regular draft is interesting.
I think we fell on opposite ends of the DeAndre Baker question last year, Connor. I believe I didn't have him in the first round.
Well, so you landed on the side of Dave Gettleman, which historically I would feel okay about, you know. You and Dave had him about the same. The very end of the first round, right?
Right.
I think that's not a bad thing.
All right. So this year we're going to go over the top 10 today, Connor. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have a little healthy conversation. And I would like to point out that I seem to every year land the ideal time spot for having my mock coming out because I feel that next week is the best time to have a mock come out because almost all the information is in, but then the last week there's always all these smoke screens and all these crazy things which can influence last minute changes. So we really should have swapped so I didn't continue to have this advantage, but I do want to acknowledge that. However, I'm quite confident that this year it will not benefit me whatsoever.
Yeah,
so
last year it was like, what was the big smoke screens last year were Ed Oliver to number 3 all of a sudden at the last minute.
Yes.
That was a good smoke screen. And I'm trying to remember, there was like 2 of them that really sort of like throttled everybody's mock drafts at the last minute and caused like a seismic change. But Ed Oliver was definitely one of them. I do remember that.
The quarterbacks last year were also a big topic of debate, namely Daniel Jones, etc. So, okay, let's start it off, Connor. You're number one, Cincinnati Bengals are on the clock. Who do you have?
Not a surprise here. Begrudgingly, I'm going to take Joe Burrow, but here's sort of an interesting thing about this mock draft. I think if I was the Bengals, my choice would be between Burrow and Tua at number one. However, Tua, we're foreshadowing a little bit, is not the second quarterback that goes in my mock draft. So I'm kind of basing it off of how things should fit. I think that Tua and Burrow would fit better in the Bengals offense. Burrow especially gets rid of the ball super quickly. They're going to have a bad offensive line. They can probably lean on some of the RPO stuff that he did at LSU. And so I think that everything is kind of set up for them to take him number one.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you mentioned here, his hip injury really did kind of change up the process. And especially in this time where he couldn't have the combine recheck. And he's certainly done everything he can to reassure teams that he's in good health. But it's not quite the same of having teams have the ability to see him once again a month before the draft and that combine medical recheck. So this year especially, I feel like that has been an additional factor.
I feel like less over at NFL.com, Cynthia Freeland does the analytics-based mock draft, and I feel like that always packs a punch because it's like the one that doesn't have the number one pick that everybody else has, you know? And I was kind of like thinking I should do that. I should just be like, yeah, you know what? Tua's should go number one. I know Steve Palazzolo at PFF agreed with that Tua should be the number one pick. He's far and away the number one pick. I thought it was interesting, though, one kind of note on them is I love the SIS Rookie Handbook. It is my favorite draft prep manual, and they do expected points added per dropback, and out of every quarterback in college that is coming into the draft this year, Tua actually adds the most value to a single snap out of all of them, slightly edging out Burrow, and then who edges out Herbert by a comfortable margin, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's a great stat. Obviously, I guess doesn't account for injury, right?
Yes.
It's like when he's on the field and when he's healthy, this is his production level.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
other factors at play too. All right, Connor. Number two on the clock is Washington.
Boring again. Chase Young from Ohio State. And somewhere in here, 2-3-4 is going to be the trade, right? I think that if you're Miami or LA, you're both looking at quarterbacks and you have to get up here somehow. And I think it just depends on where you're falling. I would guess that just based on what everybody is saying about Chase Young, and I've gone back and watched a lot of Chase Young now, I think that he's good enough to merit just staying there and taking him, and then you let the Lions and the Giants kind of worry about trading back. It was a lot of fun to watch him, specifically like when they put him in that roving linebacker thing, and a lot of teams started trying to use his speed against him, let him fly upfield and then hit him with a bunch of screens. But he's so fast, and I don't know, I think a lot of fun. And I don't know, Washington then builds a formidable front there. I mean, Montez Sweat, you had you're gonna have three first round picks there in 4 years, and that's good, right? I mean, people, you know, worked for the 49ers, so.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's definitely reminiscent of the 49ers, how they stocked up on first rounders on the defensive line, and then they get Nick Bosa as the, you know, cherry on top and complete the front and is this impact player. And it makes a lot of sense for Washington. It's a position of need. It's a player that potentially has the chance to be an immediate difference maker for your team. And they drafted a quarterback in the first round last year. So however Ron Rivera feels about Haskins, he doesn't have this evaluation period to get to know him a little bit. And so, I like your first two picks. Connor, I'm thinking that mine's going to look kind of similar so far next week. This is going to be a little boring.
We are the the gentle conversation lovers podcast. So that's okay. This can happen.
Really,
it's totally fine.
That's true. Agreement is okay on our podcast.
Totally fine.
We never yell. We rarely contradict each other. So a lot of things going on.
Perfect
here.
For this time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On the board next, the Detroit Lions picking third.
I think this is a don't overthink it. Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State. You lose Darius Slay. You let him go and you add Trufant. But I don't think that completes your secondary there. I think that, you know, Patricia likes to mix things up, make things complicated for quarterbacks, which is not easy in their division when you have Matt Stafford and Aaron Rodgers and all those and all those guys. But I think Okuda probably just puts them over the edge. You can probably put him on a really good wide receiver right away. And I thought that he was a little tougher than he got credit for. Seeing him play some of the bigger games that he played last year, everyone's saying that he wasn't as physical, but I saw him make some pretty big hits. So I actually kind of am warming up to him a little bit. And I think kind of like Chase Young is probably worth staying there unless, you know, these are the spots right here where some action is going to happen. Maybe you get blown away and there's two or three other decent cornerbacks that are going to land in your lap in round one.
Boy, the Lions are in such a weird spot, aren't they? They haven't really shown any progress since Matt Patricia's been there. They made the decision to keep him and Bob Quinn, and Stafford is aging and has had a lot of injury issues. And the idea of them drafting a quarterback, you wouldn't necessarily rule it out. True. But it does seem like, based on comments at the combine and the fact that this is a playoffs or bust type year as set up by ownership, makes it seem like they won't draft a quarterback here. But that is definitely an interesting spot, right? Because do they get a play? Like, is there someone on the board that they like? There's other teams that are trying to trade up. So I think, like, Washington and Detroit are very interesting because it's not like they're teams that you know are going to be in the market for a quarterback and will take someone there. They probably won't. And then do they like the player that they can get at that spot more than they would like a potential trade?
They're fast. I mean, both of these teams could theoretically just destroy everyone's draft and light it on fire. I mean, I think that's really interesting. And we're just kind of basing it on, I like what Andy Benoit said in, he did our team needs for us over at SI.com, which is that it's such a lie to say that teams don't draft for need. Of course they do. I mean, it's always cool to say that you're drafting the best player on the board, and maybe some people actually do that, but you're drafting for need. And so quarterback is certainly a need there. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in the first round available, and so I don't know, it'll be interesting. If I were ownership, I would almost say, like, you guys aren't allowed to do that, you know, like, I you need to put the pieces together to make the playoffs here, or if not, I'm hiring somebody else to make this decision in the long term, because it's just, that would complete that cyclical NFL thing where it's like you draft the quarterback and then things don't work out and you get another coach who doesn't want this guy. And, you know, I don't know. I would be very hesitant about that if I were the Lions.
I agree. And I also agree on the best player available. It's a best player available at a position of need.
Yeah.
And need can be defined a lot of different ways. You know, we all remember when the Giants were drafting a ton of pass rushers. Oh, well, that's not necessarily a need, but it is, because pass rushers are such an important position. So, you know, I think that's kind of where how you define need is important to that, right?
Totally.
So there's always some element of what you need on your roster, whether it's a thin position or it's just a position that's so important.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right. Looks like things are getting a little spicy here. Connor emailed me his top 10 before we got on the call here. So we have on the board at number 4, the New York Giants, but
someone got to Dave Gettleman on Zoom and organized a trade here. The Miami Dolphins are just moving up one spot. They're going to do the Bears, Mitch Trubisky thing, and I think that makes the most sense if you're Miami, because if you didn't do it before, right? If you didn't go to number 3, you would definitely go to number 4, and you have the draft capital to outbid the Chargers. You have a ton of picks. And as we saw with the Bears moving up for Trubisky, even though it was not the right move in hindsight, it is not super cost effective cost damaging, right? I think it was like a first, a third, and a fourth, or a first, a third, and a fifth to cost them to move up that one spot. And then you're just, you know, you get your person, you know, you get your guy. And I think that who knows who that is, but just kind of a weird feeling it might be Herbert based on some of the personnel moves they've made, bringing back Chan Gailey. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick can start those first 4 or 5 games. Herbert does have kind of a good short window accuracy, which is really important in Chan Gailey offenses that we've seen in the past. But I think that it would be interesting to kind of mesh what he has done well historically with some of the RPO stuff that Justin Herbert's run. And I think you could come up with a cool offense there based on the kind of the molding of those two things. So I don't know. I like Herbert. He's not my favorite quarterback in the draft, but for some reason I just have a weird feeling Miami likes him. And not just me. I mean, the Miami Herald reported that he was the top quarterback on their board. There's certainly some foundation there, but I don't know. Just getting a weird feeling about Miami and Justin Herbert.
Yeah. Cost prohibitive. It's not cost prohibitive. That's the word you're looking for. But yes, you're right. Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald, who's really tapped in with the team, has kind of been on this Dolphins to Herbert bandwagon for a while. And it was interesting to know that Stephen Ross mentioned Tua's injury history when he was interviewed about him earlier this winter. So it's definitely something that's on their mind. And maybe the calculation there is they don't think the injury risk is worth it, and they feel more comfortable with Herbert. I also think the points you make about the offense are interesting, so I like this. It's a little spicy. It's a little different, Connor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's fun now. It's going to look crazy when they draft Tua. 2 weeks, but what are you gonna do? I don't know. I don't know why. Had a weird feeling when they, because obviously had seen a lot of what Armando had reported. Trust him; he's been great down there. And then the Chan Gailey move was like, oh, interesting. You know, I don't know. It just sort of like put the two things together for me. Anyway,
and now we think also that the Giants and the Dolphins used the 1 to 2 minutes exemption to make sure that the trade could go down.
No question.
Over Zoom. No question, right? They definitely used that extra buffer to make sure everything got communicated.
Dave Gettleman needed to, you know, shut down the laptop, restart it. You know, he's on the phone with the tech guy. Dave, did you restart the laptop? Is it plugged in? And but we got it done. Everything is A-okay.
Got back on the Wi-Fi in time. All right. So that means the Giants are on the clock at 5.
This completes the Dave Gettleman 180, because not only does he trade down for the first time to accumulate assets and cover himself as a buffer for the Leonard Williams trade, he recoups some of the assets that he lost there, but he passes up a premium offensive tackle and premium defensive line talent to take Isaiah Simmons, who's a next-gen kind of player from Clemson. I think the kind of person who could... None of the linebackers that they signed this offseason can cover tight ends in the modern NFL. The Giants were gouged like that last year. They need somebody to do that. That is a huge part of the league right now, and I don't know. I think it was... I think it was Lewis Riddick on ESPN who said, if Isaiah Simmons is still there when the Giants are picking and they don't select him, I would fall out of my chair. So here's hoping that Lewis doesn't fall out of his chair.
You wrote about a couple of years ago this trend of positionless football, right? And players who could be anywhere on the field, and that's where things were headed as they were trickling up from the high school and college ranks. Simmons fits into that perfectly. I don't know if there was a position where he didn't line up in college. It seemed like, right? I mean, he was linebacker and corner, safety, yep. Maybe nose tackle. Maybe he didn't line up at nose tackle. But yeah, I mean, just the ability to move him all over. And that's what the Giants just really need, a defensive playmaker. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great selection.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a right fit for them. It gets them out of that mold. I feel like they've been obsessively rebuilding the 2007 and 2011 Giants for the last 8 years, when in truth it was the right team for that time, but football has changed significantly in those 8 years.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. On the clock with the 6th pick, the Los Angeles Chargers.
I don't know if this could have worked out any more perfectly for them, but because I did it, so I guess it's weird to say it that way. But Tua at 6, right? I mean, that's the move. You like Tyrod Taylor. You know, I think that while they're not the same quarterback, you could probably build in some similar concepts for the two of them to ease the transition. Taylor has been a good bridge guy in the past. And this way, even if the medicals don't immediately check out with Tua, you can give him a little bit of time and let him sit. I don't know. I think this is the perfect spot. I think Anthony Lynn's a great head coach, and he could design something really cool and interesting, I think, for Tua.
I agree that it's the perfect spot because there isn't pressure for him to play right away. They really do like Tyrod. They believe he's kind of an ideal bridge guy, that if he'd played last year, they could have maybe won a couple more games with him. So I think you put Tua in that position where there's not pressure for him to play right away, where you can make sure he gets 100% healthy before you're trying to put him in there. And, you know, Anthony Lynn just got a contract extension, right? So, you know, there is a little bit more patience. And then also, you know, you get this Alabama star to eventually play in the new stadium. Of course, this all, I mean, who knows if the stadium is constructed? They have people testing positive for COVID-19 on the construction site. So that's just another matter to decide. Yeah. Who knows if we'll be playing in 2020 at all, but we've talked enough about that on the podcast. I like the Tua pick, Connor.
If they, it's especially a great pick if you don't play at all in 2019. I mean,
that's right. That's right. Tua would have extra time to recover, right?
And just sort of a weird point to make, but LA is probably the perfect place to take a developmental starter, because what other place is there going to be less clamoring to make a change? I mean, it's a pretty peaceful market there. You know, I think that compared to other places, if you tried to take Tua in New York or in Washington or one of these other places, there would be a constant demand to see him play. And I don't think that that's probably necessarily the case in LA. I think they could probably get away with running with Tyrod as long as they wanted to.
And you use the word kismet, which I think is perfect here, if they were able to get him at six. And think that offseason would be really good for the Chargers. You know, they didn't land Brady, but I think I would rather have Tyrod as a bridge guy and draft Tua and move forward with a long-term plan.
No doubt.
I would feel better about that if I was at the helm of the Chargers organization.
And I think, to your point, which is a great one, is I think a similar pop, like attention-wise, like not certainly not the Brady bump that you're going to get, but Tua is not going to steal trademarks from your team and, you know, and do a bunch of nefarious stuff there. And he's going to be a good, I think, I don't know, people like Alabama quarterbacks. He's the best, he's the biggest star to come out of Alabama in a long time. I don't know. I think it works out.
You talked about a Brady bump, a Tua to a tip. I don't know the right word, Connor.
That's good.
We're all exhausting our creativity these days.
True.
Okay. The Carolina Panthers are on the board at seven.
This is boring. Derek Brown from Auburn, who is great. I mean, is a lot of fun and an exciting player, but I think they're another team, like you talk about pivot points in the draft where everything could just totally turn. I mean, they're a total unknown because we don't know what Matt Rhule is thinking in terms of how he wants to build this team. His evaluations on college players are going to be a lot fresher and probably a lot more different than some of the people that are have been working in the Panthers front office. And they could go quarterback. I mean, they could legitimately be in that discussion too. I mean, if he liked someone, you know, if he coached against someone that he thought was really special, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to move up and make a move and then just allow Teddy Bridgewater to help break him in. But Brown checks a lot of boxes. You know, they need help everywhere. I mean, this is not, this is a roster they've kind of let slim out, and you know, he can play three positions on the defensive line. He can kind of bounce around, and he causes a lot of interior pressure. So I don't know. I mean, I think that it's a safe pick. It's a good pick, and Marty Herney's done a good job with defensive linemen in the past. So I think you got to give him an edge there if he does end up liking Brown.
But you're right. This one's a total wild card because you have a new head coach that has like a 22-year contract with the Panthers. So, you know, has plenty of time to build the organization, right? But in all seriousness, you don't really know what's going to be important to him. You know, a college coach coming to the NFL, what are they going to prioritize when they draft? When is the right time to draft a quarterback? What is the most important like piece moving forward? So yeah, I think this is definitely an interesting pivot point in the top of the first round.
Yeah, eight. I would say that seven, eight, nine were the three hardest to do. I think in the draft because of how it sets everything else up. The Panthers, mm-hmm. the Cardinals, and the Jaguars.
That reminded me of that old joke from childhood. Why is six afraid of seven? Because seven, eight, nine.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's been a long time since I've heard that.
I have a good book of dad jokes somewhere here on my desk. Maybe I'll pop it out for the finale.
Joke.
Yeah.
All right. So number eight, the Arizona Cardinals, who've had a spicy offseason. We use spicy a lot, Connor, but They have.
And I was so tempted to put Jerry Jeudy there because, you know, air raid is a lot of four wide receiver looks. And if you did that, I mean, just imagine the possibilities there. I'm Larry Fitzgerald, Jerry Jeudy, DeAndre Hopkins. And then, you know, you can mix a lot of things up there. But they did have a lot of success running the ball last year, so I do think that Mekhi Becton from Louisville makes sense because This is another stat from SIS that I love. In the country, the third lowest blown pass block percentage. And if you,
that's a great stat,
yeah,
Connor.
And if he's going, and the first among sort of the top tier of offensive tackles that we've talked about, and or people are kind of projecting to land this high. So again, I'm not delusional enough to think that Kyler Murray is going to be throwing the ball 66 times a year, but if you're going to favor the pass at like 60-40, then you want somebody who is well-versed in that. And I think out of all those guys, he probably has the most experience with pass heavy, a lot of play action. So I don't know. I think maybe he's the first tackle off the board here.
Yeah, and that would be... that would be kind of, well, is it? I don't remember. When was the first offensive lineman off the board? About that point last year? I'm trying to remember back.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good pick. I mean, I think it's a need they have in Arizona, right, to be able to have this air raid. You know, you would need a good pass blocker. So I like your choice here. I don't know. I'm kind of high on the Cardinals, Connor. I was doing, like, power rankings this morning, and, like, I was thinking where to put them, and I was like, I'm kind of excited about them for 2020.
I am oddly excited about the Cardinals. I think Kyler Murray takes a huge step forward next year too, and not to take away from what he did in his first year, which I think was a lot better than he was given credit for too, but I don't know, I think next year is gonna be really interesting.
Yeah, and you also wonder, okay, like with quarterbacks, the jump from year one to year two is so important, and is that interrupted at all this year? But I feel like because Kyler knows Kingsbury and they have that relationship, like I feel like it might be mitigated a little. Any adverse effects of kind of being apart might be mitigated
totally.
A bit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, well, you foreshadowed this next pick with your previous explanation, but we have the Jaguars at 9.
Jerry Jeudy, who's so much fun to watch. And I mean, they need a legitimate star wide receiver. I think DJ Chark is good. I think you need to pair him with somebody, and Jeudy helps Jay Gruden out because you can kind of use him as your jet motion guy too. You can get a lot of that stuff rolling. If they don't go quarterback, I think that's the move there. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on this season for everybody involved, right? And so you probably take a big swing and hope that you get that Odell Beckham-esque sort of bump from Jeudy and that it all works out. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, rookie wideouts are so hit or miss. A lot of them only play one position in college. They don't move around a whole lot. Jeudy does move around a little bit. So I don't know. I think it's safe on the safer side, but wide receivers are always a massive gamble.
Yeah, it's one of the positions that is hard to make the leap from college to the pros, especially these days. And Alex Pruitt had a profile on Jerry Jeudy in this week's last week on our website and this month's issue of Sports Illustrated. So people should check that out for a little bit more on Jeudy as well. All right, Connor, number 10, Cleveland Browns.
This one, I feel like, I'm going to get the point for position, and I don't know if I'm going to get the point for the player because, you know, you have three or four really good offensive tackles that are going to be in this area somewhere, I think. But I really like Andrew Thomas from Georgia because, you know, you make the effort to make a big signing in free agency, so you've secured your left side. Andrew Thomas is a great right tackle, like just a giant run blocker, perfect for Nick Chubb. I don't know. He was a lot of fun to watch on film. He pushes people around, and the Browns need help on their offensive line. I mean, plain and simple, they were threadbare at the position last year, and it cost them dearly. I mean, you could see how many wins just kind of flew off the board for them because of an inability to protect Baker, and then Baker sort of overcompensating for all this stuff. So, Andrew Thomas, exciting. Welcome to Cleveland.
Yeah, I think you hit it. That's such a big need for the Browns. They address it in free agency. They can address it again in the draft. It seemed to be one of the main deterrents. Obviously, there were a lot of things going on in Cleveland, and it was a messy year. But in terms of like the personnel on the field, the problems with the offensive line seem to be the main deterrent to the offense having success. So I misspoke too. I looked this up. We were saying when was the first offensive tackle taken in last year's draft, and it was Jonah Williams was the first lineman to go last year at 11. Oh. But I think we were thinking that the Jaguars at 7 were in the mix. There were a lot of different options that I think in my mock I had one in the top 10, so that's probably why that had gotten stuck in my head. But you've got two offensive linemen in the top 10 this year, Connor.
Two in the top 10, and then what I'm a little bit concerned about, and to sort of foreshadow what's going to go online tomorrow, is I have a lot of runs at positions. So I think that there's going to be, you know, the Jets are next. And so they obviously need a ton of help at offensive line. Are they going to try to get up and get somebody for Sam Darnold? And you have like three or four more teams that are down the road there that might need tackles. And then tackles and wide receivers seem like a really interesting group there in that like 8 to 17 range, where it seems like a lot of those teams need either one of those things, and it kind of matches the position strength of the draft. But who knows? I think it'll be an interesting draft.
Yeah, so you've got to finish. We're recording this Monday. This mock draft's coming out Tuesday. How do you feel about picks 11 through 32, Connor?
Well, I am 218, and there was like three times where I was like, oh, like, you know, when something just feels nice, it's like a puzzle piece that you put together and everything seems to work out. But I'm entering the deep end for sure. Post 20 is just is an abyss for me in terms of any mock draft. I think I remember the only time I only got two picks post 20 right, maybe ever. But the two that I remember are Josh Jacobs last year with the Raiders, and then oddly, Bjorn Werner of the when he got drafted by I think the Colts.
Yeah, that's
like
funny.
Oddly had him right there. I don't know why. I don't know why I remember that. But so hopefully I'm looking for my next Bjorn Werner.
Yeah, it's so hard because there's so many trades and things get shuffled so much late. You know, really after you get, it's exactly what you said. After 18, it's totally in the deep end. You feel like you're kind of just like flailing around and not sure where the wall is to grab for some reprieve.
I mean, I feel like that all the time, but especially during the mock draft, yeah.
Especially during the mock draft, so. Well, you know, Connor, I have to say, this got me really, you know, excited. It's been a little hard to get into the draft this year, you know, with everything going on. Hadn't been thrilled about the NFL barreling ahead with it, and, you know, teams don't even know if they'll be at homes or if they'll be allowed to be at the facilities. Just seems like there's a lot of chaos and a lot of other stuff going on, but actually talking about the players and where they slot in, like, that's a fun part of it, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I, you know, as much as I complain about doing a mock draft every year, and, you know, we both kind of do it begrudgingly because emotionally it's a net negative, right? You know, it's like you put this work into it, you really think about where these players are going to go, you call people, you text people, you try to project everything the right way, and then everybody just tells you as soon as it goes up that you're a moron, and at best you get, you know, six right. Six would be phenomenal, you know, and then it's like, oh well, you know, there's always next year. So, but it's fun to talk about at least. So
while we're on the subject of the draft, I got an email today with the odds from Bet Online for who will the number one overall pick hug first. Okay. So I think that these odds were made without the current circumstances taken into account, okay? Because there's mom and dad, of course, probably, you know, going to be with mom and dad, maybe quarantined with mom and dad. But then there's girlfriend 3-1, friend 7-1, and sibling 7-1. Okay, I think there's almost no probability that someone is quarantined with a friend. So the friend should not be there, right? I mean, I guess if you're allowing groups of 10 or less, but that seems irresponsible.
Yes.
So I just think sibling should be higher than both girlfriend and friend, because I think there's a higher probability that you would be home with mom and dad and a sibling. But does Joe Burrow have any siblings? Now, this is a good question that I'm just considering now.
He does.
Okay.
But I think that an interesting sort of subplot to this, and I'm not going to mention the player, but I remember last year deep in the draft, and I think I probably texted you about this, I felt that there was a major girlfriend power play that really swept me off my feet. And I think it was like in the fifth or sixth round or something like that, a player with a home cam. And she was sitting closer to in proximity to him than the mom. And you could tell both of the mom and the girlfriend kind of wanted to get up there. And she kind of took command of the situation. And I was very surprised that she sort of thought that that was sort of the pecking order for her, right? Was first hug, which I was just, wow, interesting. So you never know. I mean, there could be that kind of situation. I mean, maybe there's a girlfriend or something, someone who kind of wants to make a little bit of a power play here. I don't know. Anything can happen at the draft, Jenny, you know?
I remember exactly the situation, and that is exactly what happens. The other interesting odds are highest number of people in the same room. 9.5 is the over-under, so I guess they're banking on this 10 or less situation, but, I mean, that seems, wow. I mean, if you were to have, I don't know, also, dogs and cats, but, oh, and there's, will any draftee experience local technical difficulties?
100%.
Will any draftee be shown drinking beer or popping champagne? But yes, I mean, the technical difficulty seems like a certainty. Like, I would put money on that.
You know what's going to be the winning bit here is there's going to be, like, some jovial offensive lineman who's going to be shown in his backyard 6 feet away from his dad in chairs, and they're going to do an air high five when he gets drafted.
Oh, man, you should have saved that for the Oracle this week, Connor.
True, yeah.
Maybe we can recycle.
We can just direct people back to this episode. But that's the bit, right? That's the winning bit.
That's true. Yeah. That's exactly it. Because we don't actually know. I haven't had confirmation that anyone has listened to both episodes.
True.
Like, per week. Yeah. Like, is anyone tuning in twice a week? We don't know the answer to that. If you happen to be, we would love to hear from you to know that there is one or two, you know, that one or two people exist.
If you listen to it twice a week and you made it to minute 36 of one of the episodes, God bless you. Send us your address and we'll mail you a Weekside Podcast t-shirt whenever they're printed up for us.
That's right. And last week, we're also on the MMQB feed 3 times a week. So I'm starting to feel sorry for the listeners.
That's a lot of ore. Too much ore.
Too much Brentis. On that note, we will we'll check out for today, and we hope to see you again later this week if you still want to join us. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Brentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.